Please be seated. Now, we have different colors in our liturgical year. We have different seasons. And liturgical seasons are worthwhile because they reflect the rhythm of life itself. Advent reflects seasons of our lives that are filled with hope and anticipation. We often associate these with happy times, like waiting for a wedding, like the wedding of Kate and Michael I officiated at this past Friday. The happy couple waited years to finally be living in the same country to be married. Or waiting for a baby to be born. We saw Natasha yesterday waiting, patiently waiting. Or even a few years, 1 year ago, I can't believe it was 1 year ago we were waiting for Michael and for Logan too, right? I can't believe how time flies. Or maybe it's waiting for the arrival of a loved one who has been away for a long time. As much as we've enjoyed having Cora, our student, live with us this past semester, I know that her family will be filled with joy to see her again back home in Germany. And I imagine your family too, Ina. But the first Christmas wasn't exactly happy and bright. And the readings of Advent itself aren't particularly happy either. Advent speaks of awaiting God's help in the midst of desperation, reminding us that we can find echoes of Advent as clearly in the homeless shelter as we can in the maternity ward. Advent calls us in the midst of the weight on our shoulders, and it speaks a word of hope. As we watch the news and see the pain in the world, we are faced with our own powerlessness. In this bleak midwinter, the damp, dark weather of our Pacific climate can weigh as much as the snow on the days of our fellow Canadians and the rest of Canada. We can feel weighed down in other ways too, by our ever-extending holiday to-do lists, by the suffering in the world, and by our own personal struggles. But Advent is here to remind us that we cannot save ourselves, but yet there is hope. Today, with four candles lit, the song of Mary soars through the Gospel's readings and into our hearts again, as it does every year. Mary, the young girl, the fiancée of a poor carpenter, Mary, who knows the depths of desperation that some of us might know, but many of us might never know. Mary, who felt herself powerless and afraid, but sang a song of revolution to God, who was about to save the whole world. We often think of Mary as gentle and meek, but today in Luke's Gospel, in the story that is retold every fourth Sunday of Advent, Mary is brave and bold, singing loud and strong. She isn't one-dimensional in any way. Luke portrays her with nuance that balances fear with courage, doubt with faith, and vulnerability with strength. Everything, the very shape of human history, is about to change. The new dawn is on its way, and Mary sings out to greet it. The wait lessens, and hope is born. Now, I don't know if any of you have read the series called The Hunger Games. I'm kind of going out on a limb here. Maybe some of you have, but I really enjoyed it with my daughters, one in particular. But if you haven't heard about it, if you haven't read it, because of popular culture, you've most likely at least heard of it and the movies that star Jennifer Lawrence. Now, the first installment of the three-part series, there's a scene in the movie that's not in the book, but it well sums up the trilogy's theme. President Snow, who is the dictator of a dystopian, futuristic country of Panem, played by Donald Sutherland, by the way, is walking in his rose garden with the chief gainmaker. His name is Seneca Crane, I believe. And Crane is the man responsible for creating a game that pits young people from the 12 districts of Panem against one another in a highly publicized fight to the death every year. It's kind of like the CFL, but on steroids. The winner of the Hunger Games is then held up as a brave, strong hero that represents the spirit of Panem. It's a pretty intense, allegorical story about the imbalances of wealth and power that exist in the world. Now, President Snow asks Seneca Crane why the games must have a winner. If the capital simply wanted to show its power and to instill fear and control, he says, why not simply execute people? Why the games? Why a winner? Seneca Crane does not understand. He stares back. He's pretty confused. Hope, President Snow says simply. Hope is the only thing that is stronger than fear. A little hope is effective. A lot of hope is dangerous. A spark is fine as long as it's contained. A little hope, says Snow, would allow the games to entertain people and would allow them to have a hero to root for, while also keeping the capital firmly in control. A lot of hope can topple regimes entirely. Now, Mary's song in this passage of Luke is so subversively hopeful in its cultural, socioeconomic, and political implications that it has been banned many times in modern history. And I'm talking in real life, not a movie. When the British ruled India, the Magnificat, Mary's song, was prohibited from being sung in churches for fear that it would give people ideas. Too much hope. And similarly, in Argentina during the Dirty War, after the mothers of disappeared children put up posters in the Capitol Plaza with words of the Magnificat, the same words that are found in Luke's Gospel in the Bible, the military junta banned all public displays of the song. Too much hope, they decided, is a dangerous thing. Now, hope is more than mere optimism. A lot of hope can shake the foundations of everything that weighs us down. A lot of hope can change the course of history. For Mary's part, she doesn't initially greet the news of her pregnancy with her soaring song and blazing hope. When Luke's gospel first introduces us to Mary, she's more like the traditional image of Mary, young, meek, seemingly timid and unprepared, but ultimately faithful. When the angel tells her the news, she consents, although one would wonder why, but she's not singing yet. As she's absorbing the news from the angel Gabriel that she will conceive and bear a child, he tells her, perhaps to console her, perhaps to offer her community, that Elizabeth, your relative, is pregnant too, even in her old age. Now, Gabriel doesn't actually tell Mary to go to Elizabeth, but Luke says that she still made haste to go to the Judean town in the hill country to see her. Maybe Mary wants to be near someone who understands. Elizabeth is also pregnant by a miracle. Elizabeth, Mary knows, won't think that she's crazy. And here with another human being to understand that God works in really weird and unexpected and direct ways, Mary is able to find the courage to sing her song of hope. Not ordinary optimism, but great hope, the kind that catches fire, the kind that sings out loud. Today, Mary sings as she invites us into the vulnerable territory of daring to hope too big. Optimism looks behind us to find comfort in what we've experienced before, but hope, the big world-shaking musical hope of Mary, it looks ahead, not knowing that we cannot imagine what God is up to. Now, there's nothing wrong with optimism. Some of my very favorite people are eternal optimists. Optimism hopes for a good future, for fun with friends and family during the holidays, for a blessed and happy new year, and for love and warmth to surround us. There's nothing wrong with a little optimistic Advent cheer. But if you've ever experienced the depths of despair, if you've seen the pain that exists in the world, heck, if you even just watch CNN, you know that optimism is not enough on its own. It is too difficult to sustain. The world is broken, it's violent, it's divided, and we alone cannot fix it. Our one spark of hope is that God has spoken and told us that someday all things, every single thing, from our personal struggles to the weight of the world's pain, shall be made right. And that hope is why Mary sings today. Today, the gospel story invites us, like Mary, to seek out others in order to find our song of hope. It wasn't until Mary and Elizabeth in the Judean hills that they came together that our hope burst into song. And maybe whether we know it or not, maybe that's why we're here together today too, to find some community. We've come here this morning making haste, or not, to seek one another out, to gather together so that we can too can sing some sort of song of hope for the future that we don't know what it looks like. Our song is one of extraordinary hope. Hope that has seen the broken and divided states of the world and knows that it cannot afford to hope too small. We cannot repair the world on our own. Only God can, and only God will. And in the meantime, in the bleak midwinter, we are called to make our corner of the world that God so loves a little less divided. We're called to make our corner of the world a little more trustworthy, a little bit more hopeful, a little bit more peaceful. We are called to sing right here in this little corner of our world. Now, the best part about Mary's song of hope is that it is never hope unfulfilled. Every year we remember her bold song to remind ourselves that God has already broken through. Even in the darkness, even in the deepest disappointments, even when we are betrayed, and even when the world looks most broken, we keep this crazy hope alive that God has and God will continue to break through. And today we make haste to find each other out, to sing that hope again, and to fan that spark into a flame once more. I found a quote from the Reverend Joseph Peter Matthews, who's an Episcopal priest in Washington State. And he says this. He says, "That's why I love Advent. Jesus never doesn't get born. We long, we hope, we wait, we anticipate, and we are never let down at the last minute. Every year, Christmas always arrives. Even if we're exhausted or brokenhearted, the light of Christ always comes through. The final candle is always lit. Advent and Christmas are here every year to remind us that God has already broken through. Despite the world's pain, the dawn is well on the way." And that is why Mary and Elizabeth sings her heart out. So let us today find one another and sing our hearts out to God who breaks through, who sustains our lives, and who dares us to hope way too big and beckons us to sing out loud. Amen.